Previously on 24.
Jim, we both know that you've been one of the most outspoken opponents to my decision to call off this attack. If you have something to say, I would expect you to bring it to me first.
Does the president have any idea
what's going on?
I don't think so.
Let's keep it that way.
Thank you for assembling at such short notice. I'm sure you're all wondering why I've invited you here. It is my sincere belief, based on his response to today's events,
David Palmer is unfit to continue as president of the United States.
Looks like you've had quite a day.
I didn't kill anyone.
I know you didn't. We know Gary Matheson killed his wife. We're looking for him now.
So you're off the hook for everything that happened this morning.
I thought I made myself clear, Tony. We're past Bauer.
No, sir. You are. I'm not. Now, if you're not comfortable with me making my own decisions here, I suggest you relieve me of my duties right now.
That won't be necessary.
Thank you, sir.
Don't thank me. I just don't have anyone to take your place right now.
No!
Katie, you all right?
Yeah, they've got the chip.
All I want is the chip.
You come in here, I'm gonna smash this thing. I'll put it right under my foot.
The following takes place between 4 a.m. and 5 a.m.
Please let me know who I'm speaking to.
It doesn't matter who we are. The only thing that matters is we got something you want.
I am Dennis Haysbert. I play President David Palmer.
And I'm Howard Gordon. I'm an executive producer on 24, and I co-wrote this episode with Bob Cochran.
Well, we're on an active stage at our facility here in Woodland Hills, and there are offices all around us.
And very thin walls.
And very thin walls.
And a lot of happy people because we're 2 days away from wrapping the season. So,
oh yeah.
Except for the writers.
Except for the writers, yeah. You guys have a daunting task ahead of you.
But soon it'll be an empty building.
Please, Kate, I need your help. Get in touch with CTU. Please.
I'm going to give you 30 seconds to open that door.
Give it to him. Are you crazy?
I'll tell you, one of the interesting things about this episode was it's a complete departure from pretty much every other episode we've done, which we'll soon see. But the challenge was to match the urgency of Jack Bauer's pursuit of this chip with what turned out to be this very, courtroom drama, basically.
Yeah.
And what was not even designed at the beginning was that this chip was going to be in some ways the 11th hour evidence that was going to help or hurt your attempt to maintain your presidency.
Yes.
We got a Pentagon briefing stating that our bombers aren't going back to their bases. Do you know anything about this?
I understand they're in a holding pattern awaiting refueling.
I ordered them back to their bases.
Yes, sir, I know. That's why I'm here. Could I ask you to come with me for a minute?
Come with you where?
Just down the hall to the main conference room.
What's going on, Mike?
Please, Mr. President, come with me.
You're ordering me to the conference room? I would have felt a little quiet. This is the first time I was able to see this, so I'm kind of taking this all in.
It's very important, sir.
Mike, I'm the President of the United States. I'm not going anywhere until you tell me what this is about.
I guess we learned previously that David Palmer's cabinet was beginning to assemble.
Cabinet members who question whether you're fit to continue as chief executive of this country.
And these people are in my conference room?
Speaking, sir. They are.
I don't know. One of the challenges of playing the president on 24 is not really knowing who you could trust. I mean, it seems like every person that I held close to me was stabbing me in the back at one time or another. And it was a little disconcerting, you know, because when I think in terms of being the president and my decision-making abilities, to have all these people suddenly turn on me kind of tells me that I really didn't know who I had around me.
or, you know, or what they were capable of. And that bothers me a little bit. You know, I figured I would have a little bit more more of a handle on, you know.
Although the same could be said for Julius Caesar. Or any great, I mean, in the end, this was a palace coup, and I think a conceit that even the best people are susceptible to bad judgment or to, I think in some ways it's a parallel story with Jack Bauer. Right. And
I think there's a general feeling that some...
Here you are arrayed with, I mean, there was a technical challenge this episode. I mean, we, aside from the networks and the studio's concern about how do we tell a courtroom drama... that's not what the show is. It's not adrenalized enough. And, of course, we had to say, well, this is going to be really interesting. This is David Palmer's episode. It's, in fact, the first episode that we acknowledged and said this is really about the Palmer presidency. And it was a great technical challenge to get, if you'll see all the screens. And we actually rigged three separate stages on the at the same time, in real time. So this was being this courtroom drama was playing out on three or four separate stages, if you include the fuselage.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything was wired in real time and playing from stage to stage. And it has a really eerie and tremendous effect.
It's really interesting effect to it. And, boy, I mean, just as an actor, I felt like I was just, like, on the tip of a pin. You know, that everybody was, you know, I felt like everyone was, I mean, look at the way this is set up. I felt like every eye was on me, and I was under this constant pressure to perform as a president and to prove that what I was saying and what I was doing was right.
And even there's, and you're right, the graphicness of it, the fact that these faces are even larger than life and looming over you and surrounding you is in some ways a lot creepier and a lot more threatening than had you been in the same room. Yeah. And even the technical aspect of it is almost more threatening. There, you have to convey yourself across some distance and defend yourself across a distance. They're all assembled in one room talking about you, and there you are sort of isolated.
Yeah.
If military strikes do not occur imminently, casualties to American soldiers will increase by tens of thousands of lives.
That analysis is undisputed.
The risk of attacking innocent countries is unacceptable. We have to be sure.
Everybody is sure, Mr. President. Everybody but you.
Well, as it happens, I'm the only one who counts. This meeting is over.
Mr. President, one way or another, there will be a vote. I think...
Well, the real challenge of this show is, compared to, say, for instance, X-Files, which told independent episodes on a week-by-week basis, this one really has to... The idea of telling a whole story that begins and ends 24 hours later in real time is kind of a conceit that is, and on some levels, easier and on some levels, a lot more difficult. But they're similar in the, well, for one thing, there's no aliens in this one, which, and or vampires or monsters, which is kind of a relief.
Seen in that light, your refusal to authorize.
But they're both very lean storytelling experiences.
Listen to me, all of you.
I will say, while I have Dennis here, it's really just been such an amazing experience to work with Dennis, and with frankly the whole entire cast. I think has elevated this project and takes it to a level that surprises us continually. I mean, for me to watch this, I'm sorry you can't watch this for the first. Dennis is watching this at the same time as and trying to comment on it at the same time. But I've seen it now a couple hundred times, and it's great. It came out really, really well.
Can any one of you look me in the eye and tell me I'm disabled?
Mr. President, the issue is not your demeanor over the past few minutes, your actions over the past
20 hours.
Mr. President, the Vice President has raised serious questions, and in my opinion, it would be a mistake to ignore them. Now, for my own part, I'm confident that if you explain yourself with your usual candor and clarity, all questions will be resolved to the satisfaction of everyone here.
Mr. Prescott, there seems to be a collective feeling that a discussion is called for. In the interest of putting this behind us, I'll agree on one condition. When it's over, if I'm supported, you tender your resignation as the Vice President of this country.
The challenges of this show for me has always been being the chief executive of the United States and the responsibility that comes with that, not just on the show, but even in my private life. There's a certain amount of decorum that I have to display, I believe, just self-imposed. And I know it's, in the long run, it really doesn't matter what I do on or off the screen, but for me, just my own personal belief is that I have to maintain a certain footing. And I don't know if I'm saying that right, but like I said, I'm trying to watch this for the first time and comment on it. I mean, the challenge of this is just, keeping my cool in this particular episode.
It really is bringing to a head a very important relationship between you and Mike Novick, who is one of this guy who's obviously played by Jude Ciccolello, who's one of the most trusted or up to this moment had been.
Right, he is my Judas Iscariot. That's what I've been calling him all during this last couple of episodes.
And I think the challenge for us when we wrote it, and the challenge for Jude when he played it, and the challenge for Dennis when he reacted to it was, what was the level of betrayal? I mean, Mike Novick thinks he's doing the right thing, and hopefully we've supported, from their perspective, the fact that enough evidence adds up that, in fact, what they're doing is not psychotic or ill-motivated, but done out of the best intentions and most patriotic intentions for the country. We have the advantage of watching Jack Bauer and President Palmer in very intimate circumstances, much more intimately than any of the other cabinet members have seen them. So we have an advantage over, say, these other cabinet members. Right. So we know we're rooting for.
Yeah, but there are some. I don't know. There are a few holes, because Jude's character, Mike Novick, knows certain things, and though he wasn't in the room when I was grilling a couple of the people that you'll see as the show progresses, the information that I relayed to him was almost immediate upon seeing these people and interrogating them. So he makes a conscious choice, or the writers have put him in a position where he has to make a conscious choice to kind of fudge what he knows the truth to be.
Yeah, and I think emotionally we defended that, and I think Jude played it, that he's doing maybe the right thing or the wrong thing for the right reasons. I mean, right. I think that's how he played it. He may, in fact, have fudged the truth to make sure that the right thing, which is this military action, gets done.
Right.
And I'll say, what's interesting for me, again, watching this, is that how we've attached what's essentially a very static notion. Here's a computer chip, and its contents will or won't preserve David Palmer's presidency. And, we do little 24 things like, oh, the chip got broken during the fight. Things that actually draw it, and hopefully in an excruciating way, what's really a kind of simple and, just a bunch of screen work on a computer. And then in the end, we learn the thing was broken, and David Palmer is once again and finally put in a position of making a judgment call and relying on his relationship to Jack Bauer.
He asked me to keep the story under wraps.
But to me, this episode is very much about Jack Bauer and David Palmer. It's really the two of them against the entire world. Jack is challenged at CTU, and he's challenged now by his own people.
Did you feel this was a violation of your First Amendment rights as a journalist, as well as an American citizen?
Of course.
Ron.
This was very much, a TV convention in the way that we can revisit. It's a way for us to revisit the entire year. People could watch this episode for the first time and frankly catch up to the entire year. And watch the balance, hopefully. So it had a kind of a more callow intention as well. Or not callow, but hopefully we can pick up another million viewers between now and the end of the season.
No, I don't. But under the Bill of Rights, that decision was mine. Not yours, Mr. President.
One thing I will say, too, about the writing and the construction of the episode is the 25th Amendment. I mean, we knew that we needed a way to stage a palace coup, and this 20, and it's sort of like when you ask, you receive. I mean, we found out that there's a 25th Amendment, which stretched not too strongly. You know, something like this could happen. Mm-hmm. It's which is really was a boon to us, and we tried to preserve as much as possible, obviously, in the elevated conceit of 24, how something like this could happen, and if not follow the letter of the law, pay respect to the reality of the amendment.
Control CX-5.
And some of the courtroom dramas we thought of, you know, as inspirations for this were 7 Days in May, which was the Kirk Douglas movie.
Make sure the leads are exposed.
That was kind of the big one. Strangelove, even in its own way, that these bombers were hurtling across, you know.
Damn it.
What is it?
The chip is damaged.
How bad?
I'm not sure. Part of the microprocessor has gone in the...
Here's that example, again, of again where some small little technical detail can ruin the whole thing. And I admire Kiefer once again for making... for really selling in his reaction to something. You know, we understand the significance of what's happening now because of the way Kiefer is reacting to it and the way Reiko is reacting to it. In the great 24 tradition... Things go from bad to worse whenever possible.
Kim, we're in the middle of something really important right now. Can I have him get back to you?
Tony, please. It'll just take a minute.
Okay. Okay, just hold on.
Are you getting it?
Yeah, I got it, Jack, but you were right. Data's pretty scrambled.
Hey, Jack. I just assigned 2 IT people to help Michelle with this. We should be able to get through it in about 15, 20 minutes tops.
Okay, good.
Also... I got Kim on the line for you.
Thank you, Tony.
Kim, I got your dad on the line. Go ahead.
Dad?
Sweetheart.
This, by the way, I think was the reintroduction of Kim after a several episode hiatus, which has been an ongoing challenge.
Glad you're okay.
Me too.
Of course, anytime we can put Kim in the middle of some very important business that Jack is in the midst of, it I think that's where she works the best.
Thank you so much.
I missed you too, honey.
Being the president on a hit television series, the way that works in public is, I think I'm asked at least twice a day to run for president. People really love and enjoy the president that I'm playing on TV. And though that is very, you know, complimentary and everything else, is. There's a self-imposed kind of straightforwardness I have to maintain. I have to really watch what I do now, watch what I say, who I say it to. My political opinions mean a lot more now. Where before I can, you know, I could just, you know, come off the cuff with a comment and not have to worry about any repercussions of it. You know, I say something political, it could end up in the paper.
Have you ever talked to Martin Sheen?
Have I ever spoken to Martin Sheen? Yeah, I've spoken to Martin a lot, but no political conversations.
It's interesting. There was a great article, though, in the LA Times about how President Palmer versus President Bartlett would handle the situation.
I saw that. It was really funny to me. And I've had questions like that. How do I feel my presidency is better or worse than President Bartlett's? I said, well, you know, I just like to believe that President Bartlett and President Palmer are in two alternate universes, and we are the best presidents within our universe. And I leave it at that. Because I don't ever want to get into
it. I'm personally voting for David Palmer.
You know, I tell you something. I mean, for what David Palmer has to go through on an hourly basis, I think he handles the presidency really quite well. And it's really been an honor and a joy to play this character. And I'm really, really excited and proud of the fact that what the writers have been able to do, because they really make it easy for me to make my transitions and to play the President of the United States the way I like to play it. It's almost like a symbiotic relationship. You know, they write it down, I interpret it, and somehow it comes out right. It comes out on a tone that is, you know, that you don't have to stretch or reach for, that it's there. You know, to be able to play the scene previously with Mike Novick and maintain my cool while doing it. You know, Dennis, I don't know. Dennis would probably want to throw him up against the wall and pummel him.
But I think that's one of the great but that's what you do. You have that kind of energy, and there's a cool, but there's also a kind, there's a strength, and yes. I think that anger is so, it just, it's resonant. It's not sedated. It's quite alive and pretty ferocious.
Yeah, I've really learned as an actor how to be more cerebral with anger rather than with loud outbursts and, you know, and just, you know, uncontrolled vehemence. You know? I mean, there are times when he kind of loses control, but for David Palmer to lose control is still sedate.
Do you ever use your height, though, as a weapon?
You know, I never think about that. I never think about using my height, but I do.
I mean, I notice it sometimes. It's just, it, and again, whether it's subtext or whether it's just there, it's interesting yeah. that when you, there's a physical threat that I'm not going to beat you up right now, but I could.
I could. You know, I don't think I've ever really consciously used my height, but that, I think, you know, subconsciously maybe.
Right. I know I haven't used mine.
I really have gotten good at my looks. Oh, I can look at somebody now and stare daggers into them and people know exactly what I'm thinking. And that's a tribute to the subtext that's given to me by the writers.
Is that true?
Oh, of course not. Fairness to the president, I think he genuinely believed it to be true.
But why would he hold such a belief?
David Palmer is a decent man. Maybe he's too decent for
I'm still looking at this. I'm still amazed at how well the power of what was going to be actually an impediment to a courtroom drama seems to work visually. Mm-hmm. That we have this graphic screen. It's both more intimate and less intimate at the same time.
I just heard you ordered two ITs onto some kind of retrieval project. They were working military intel.
Jack Bauer has a chip. Contains an audio file that we expect will prove that the Cypress audio was indeed forged.
Where is this chip?
It's been damaged.
Damaged?
Yeah, Jack sent us the data, but it's pretty messed up. The audio file needs to be reconstituted, which is going to take a little time.
By the way, I just got off an interview with People magazine, which named Carlos one of the 50 most beautiful people. I know. Look, you got to see the look of horror on Dennis's face right now.
And not David Palmer?
I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm embarrassed to say that so little of the show is planned, and you know, fortunately, it comes at the end. I think maybe more of it was planned unconsciously than any of us give ourselves credit for. But it's remarkable how we probably didn't come up with the idea of this palace coup till roughly the time we were finishing episode 15, when the nuclear bomb exploded. So probably about six episodes before this began shooting, we said, "Geez, where are we gonna go now?" And we realized that, all right, let's set up a war. And let's put David Palmer and Jack Bauer on the other side of it. And this is obviously going to be the culmination from the executive branch, was going to be something like a palace coup.
The way it's planned, it's like life for me. So I have no idea what's going to come next. So I have to play the truth of the moment as I know it. So it doesn't matter what they do. I just have to pick up the script and say, okay, this is where I am now. And I have to deal with it. The only thing I've ever tried to change with anything that has ever happened with David Palmer or the scripts that I've been involved in are words here and there. Things that make it easier to come out of my mouth. I never worry about story and subject matter because I trust the writers implicitly to come up with something that's going to hold weight. You know, it's going to hold water. And if it's really glaring, I'll know as soon as I read it.
It's a collaborative effort. I mean, the actors really are charged with the continuity, the emotional and the factual continuity of their characters. And I think in this one, you had a line where you said there was precedent for my action. I think earlier we missed that scene.
Oh, that's
but,
right.
But again, you know, it's really this ongoing, you know, monitoring of where we were and, you know, what I know.
I only know what the president told me. I wasn't in the room.
Mr. Stanton, thank you again. Legally, you'll remain in custody as President Palmer has ordered until this matter is resolved.
I understand.
Mr. President, if you have any evidence you'd like to present, please do so now.
The testimony that... There was a hole here that's kind of interesting. Not a hole, but we needed to omit the rest of Stanton's torture, because it would, in fact, have let you go. And so there's an interesting sort of 18 minutes of omitted videotape.
Yeah.
Frankly, we've never accounted for. I couldn't tell you who did it to this day. You
yeah,
may have
it
your
could
theories.
Have been, yeah, it could have been something as simple as a transference or somebody there that actually sabotaged the tape.
But we have no answer for it. We just knew we needed it to happen, so it happened.
Any chance for peace in the Middle East will vanish forever. Even if it costs American lives in the future, we must delay the attack until we are certain of our ground.
Excuse me, Mr. President. I just received an urgent message from CTU Division Chief Ryan Chappelle. Apparently, Jack Bauer has evidence he claims will prove the Cyprus audio was forged. Please, everyone, just shh.
I think something like 35 pages or 30-something pages out of a 50-page script was in one room.
Yeah.
And that is just not 24. That's not... So we all recognize it was a challenge, and I think, you know...
But as you can tell, the tension is still there. You know, because the audience and Jack Bauer and David Palmer know the truth. And everyone else within the story is operating on a different truth as they know it. But the audience and Jack and David know what the truth is. Even Reiko and Tony, to some extent, know what the truth is. And it's very interesting to see it played out. And you can see, and you can kind of see and feel where it's going. He says, oh, no.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because in a season of misplaced, or of alliances, and of even between Michelle and Tony, there was this, following the nuclear bomb, Tony was charged with running CTU, and Michelle and he found themselves as loggerheads. In this episode, the alliances are now shaking out. Quickly,
yes.
What's emerging is Palmer's only ally left, frankly, is Lynn, who is laid up, having been, you know, sabotaged by Novick, and Jack Bauer. So Jack Bauer is Palmer's only chance to reclaim his presidency, and through that, make the right decision for an unjust war. And back at CTU, Tony and Michelle have now... are beginning to work together again, but they find themselves against everybody. So,
yeah, it's the toughest thing about playing the president right now, as these episodes kind of wind down, is that the people that are loyal to me are either dying or you know, don't have the total information I need, or stabbing me in the back at this point. And it's really, you know, it really impressed upon me how lonely the job is. Because when you're doing things where everybody is in support of it, you have all the support lifting you up. When you do something that everybody questions, you know, you are very much alone. And it's very interesting to be able to feel that, even within a TV show.
Did you feel that way at all last year when you found that your family had...
Oh, absolutely. Had,
I mean, so in some ways it was a parallel story.
Yeah. You know, I had no one. I had to try to find alliances, as you'll see in the next couple of episodes after this. I looked to a Secret Service agent for solace. And
That played really well, too.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Glenn's a great actor.
Yeah.
Jack, it's Tony and Michelle.
Excuse me. You got the audio file?
No.
What do you mean, no? Are you telling me that there's no audio file on that ship?
If there were, they were destroyed when the ship was damaged.
Look, Jack, Chappelle's phoning the president. He wants you on the call.
Yeah, I bet he does.
Also, some of the information Michelle was able to recover
may be worth looking into.
What kind of information?
Identical code fragments.
This is always where, when we close one door, we find ourselves having to open another, and this is obviously the narrative point where, even though Jack doesn't have what he had hoped for, there is something that he can follow up on and hopefully, you know, get to the truth in time. So this is exposition, but it's what sets us up now to hopefully the end game.
Talk to this guy on your own.
Fine. What's his last known address?
210 Laurel Canyon Boulevard, North Hollywood.
Okay, I got it. I'll get back to you.
All right.
Sorry, I've got to go.
Where?
We got something off the chip, not what we're looking for, but it's a lead. I'm gonna have to follow it up. As soon as you're ready to leave here, one of the officers will take you back to CTU so you can be with your father.
Thanks.
You know, it's interesting. Our expectations and our hopes for the show have risen along with, I think, the audience's. So we're all pulling on the same end of the rope. And, you know, it's a challenge, but I think we had a similar challenge last year, between last year and this year, and between this year and next year. We're right now in the middle of, not, I should say, I wish we were in the middle. We're sort of at the beginning of figuring out what we want to do next year. And I will confess, it's very challenging. It's very challenging. And I believe next year will be proof about the longevity of the show. But we said the same thing about this year, so hopefully, you know, this is something that can go on for a while.
We want to resume the operation. We need to come to a conclusion now.
One thing we have learned is that, you know, as action-oriented and as adrenalized as the show is, it really is a show about people. And it is most interesting when people who we've come to know are acting, you know, it's a about characters, about, you know, it's the drama. It really is the human drama. It's you playing with Mike and you playing with Sherry and you playing with Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what is ETU?
Jack Bauer and Ryan Chappelle are on the line.
This is President Palmer.
Mr. President, this is Ryan Chappelle.
Hello, Ryan.
I have Jack Bauer on the line as well. He'll give you an update.
Mr. President, I found the chip, but unfortunately it's been very badly damaged.
Is it in good enough shape to prove that the Cypress recording was forged?
Sir, in its present condition, I'm afraid it doesn't prove much of anything.
Can it be repaired?
No, sir. I'm
I think the reason people follow the show and are so enthralled with it, as I am, is the combination of the intrigue and action. You have Jack tearing around town, you know, adrenaline racing, guns blaring. And then you come in and you have the intrigue of what goes on within the confines of a presidency during a crisis, and you see how in a crisis the cooler heads have to prevail, how you have to disseminate information, and, you know, and actually a lot of the things that David Palmer does is by feel, by instinct, trusting Jack Bauer and trusting his own choices. You know,
I love this look. I'm just gonna interject. I just love this moment.
Yeah, this is a moment where he is just unsure. He knows.
The one coming up right here is just so powerful.
When, Mr. President?
I don't know.
Meanwhile, the window for a surprise attack is rapidly closing. It's time to vote.
Mr. Vice President, if you could indulge me for 1 minute. Mr. President.
This Bauer thing is an illusion, a mirage. Every time you get near it, it moves further away. For your sake, for the country's, authorize the attack. All this will just go away.
And a lot of people, Americans and non-Americans, will die for no reason.
We don't know that, Mr. President.
I just think this is, again, you know, this is the crucible of this guy's character, which is, it is fairly hopeless, and there's, you're just not going to compromise.
Yeah, he's going to throw himself on the sword in order to try to give people, you know, the sense that he is right, and for them to, you know, to think about what it is they're doing. He's putting the responsibility on everyone else in that room and in those other rooms.
Conduct a voice poll. The accumulated numbers will be reflected up on the screen. Mr. Novick?
Ms. Secretary of Transportation, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Secretary of Treasury?
No.
Almeida.
Tony, it's Jack. I'm about half a block from Hewitt's loft. Has the FBI sent over his file yet?
Yeah, we just got it.
What do I need to know?
Well, the State Department recruited him right out of Caltech. He revamped their entire technical surveillance program. Then he got caught manipulating intel on some files that he didn't have clearance for. He tried to kill himself in custody, spent a year in psychiatric prison in Augusta before being released last September.
No connection to Kingsley.
No, not that we can find.
Okay. One of the other intriguing things about this episode is the vote itself. The way I read it, it sounded like there was like, I thought it was going to be like a landslide vote that I'm out. But the fact that it goes is very even, and up until the end that I am, you know, actually ahead in the voting. All right, so I've touched some people. I've put my point across, and other people are going to react the way they're going to react, and whether they're reacting on prejudices, or they're going to react because they don't like something I did 10 years ago or 5 years ago or yesterday. You know, you don't know why they're motivated to vote the way they are. And I think this is one of the most intriguing episodes I think that we've done.
And if you'll notice the vote here, whether we play the vote straight through in real time or suspended at the end of Act 4 was a matter of some debate among, you know, the writing staff. And I think that just we cliffhung the up that very fact, and now we're saying that, in fact, it is a swing vote. It all comes down to a swing vote. There's one guy who, John Rubenstein. We missed the scene before, but it may be worth noting that that scene was shot and different words were in Jack's mouth. We actually wrote a whole bunch of different dialogue. The scene where Jack is getting out of the car in front of Hewitt's apartment was a different scene entirely. We just added the words you're hearing. So we couldn't afford to go back out and reshoot it.
I'm compelled to vote no.
I hope this was something that the very fact that what's on the other side of this thing is the clear and present loss of 10,000 or 20,000 American lives was something that we hope was a strong enough reason to compel these other people mm-hmm. to vote against you. You know, again, it was the best thing we could come up with at the time. I mean, having lived in almost real time with a real war, this was always a very challenging. What was challenging about this was that we were in the midst of a real war that did take, in fact, months and months to plan and debate, and in fact, we had to compress that reality into mm-hmm. 7 hours.
This was a particularly painful moment for me personally. Just knowing, you know, just as the character and as Dennis, is such a sense of betrayal. I couldn't believe that people did not have the vision or the insight, you know, to trust, you know, what it was I was saying and what I was doing.
Was there self-doubt? Did you, like, say that, did I not convey myself clearly enough, or have I done something wrong? Or did you think at any point that you're wrong, or you had the certainty that you are right?
No, circumstantially, you know, there's so many other things that happened that I couldn't convince people of what I was saying was the absolute truth. You know, that's what got me. That's what got under my skin, you know. And to look at all these faces, all these people, this, you know, I handpicked all of these people. I said, how could I have been so wrong?
You know, I'll say that one thing that we planned but never got to really add was that this vice president was somebody who was in the primaries, was your chief adversary. And that you guys hooked up mm-hmm. to, you know, for political reasons, and it never really worked in the context of the script, and in some ways probably would have been a complicating factor.
Well, the one thing I believe I can say about this this episode, I think it's one of the best episodes that we've shot. So much intrigue, so much excitement, you know, and it was all without gunshots.
Well, that shot in particular was a very telling shot, and I think Ian Toynton on the set was so excited. You were there, I think, when he lowers his hand, revealing the bombers, mm-hmm. and the graphic behind him was kind of an accident, but a happy one, or maybe it wasn't an accident.
I live in a world where there are no accidents.
There are no accidents. As Dennis said, and as you'll see, this episode really did set up the climax in this and the next three episodes, 22, 23, and 24. And for those of you who are about to see it now, we realized as we sat in the room that the only characters who were left standing that really mattered, that people would really care to see play out the rest of the drama, were Jack Palmer, or former President Palmer, and his ex-wife, Sherry. And so, with that in mind, we decided to have her enter stage right about now.
Wow. I got goosebumps on that one.
Yeah.
That nice reveal. Amazing show. I'm very, very happy and proud to be part of it.
Yeah, and this one in particular, I think, came out beyond our expectations, and I'm really, really, really happy with it. I think it was a challenge. We had a lot of obstacles and a lot of needles to thread, and I think we threaded them pretty well. And we skated over the holes, you know, hopefully quickly enough and fast enough that, you know, you don't notice until the ride's over.
And I do love exceeding expectations.
Anyway, thank you.
Yes, thank you. This has been fun.